Let's head off to see what's happening beyond the headlines now. Peter Dykstra of Environmental Health News, EHN.org, and thedailyclimate.org acts as our guide, and he joins us on the line from Conyers, Georgia. Hi, Peter. What's up?
Hi, Steve. Let's start with a little bit of a facepalm from a coal industry giant. Actually, a double facepalm. A buzz phrase these days is energy poverty, the notion that poor people are poor in part because energy is so expensive. Well, the men and women of Peabody Energy would like you to know that the solution to energy poverty is to buy more and more of their coal.
Yeah, but I think we've learned that there are some major side effects from coal burning.
Yeah, just a few. But that's not what gets me about this. Peabody's a 125-year-old company that built its declining fortune on the backs of coal mining families in the Midwest and Appalachia. They helped create some of America's poorest communities. So coal, as a cure for poverty, is a bit of a reach. But Steve, Peabody's not done reaching.
Okay, what else?
I'm not making this up, and presumably neither were the folks at The Guardian when they first reported this, but at an industry conference last September, Peabody CEO Greg Boyce suggested that more coal energy could have helped develop and distribute an Ebola vaccine more quickly and possibly could have staved off the Ebola epidemic in West Africa. Steve, coal can do anything.
Well, it is true that many parts of Africa don't have access to abundant electricity, but there wasn't a vaccine to distribute, so it seems a stretch.
Seems a ludicrous stretch, according to health experts. And one final note on all this. Mr. Boyce retired this month as Peabody CEO, and he's reportedly earned over $57 million over an eight-year stretch as a coal boss.
So coal seems to have cured his poverty. What's next?
Well, we've heard lots about the big losers in the West Coast drought, agriculture and big drinking water systems. Everybody's hurting, and even when the rains do come, like in Texas and Oklahoma recently, they can take a big toll in lives and property. But let's take a quick tour of some of the other less visible things hurt by this epic drought on the West Coast. Whitewater sports, for example. No snowpack in the Sierras, no roaring rivers, and a greatly reduced rafting and kayak season. Salmon and salmon fishermen. Steve, if you're a salmon, and I'm not saying that you are, your spawning river is too warm and dry, how do you get back to the ocean?
Well, since it's California, Peter, I'm tempted to say you take the freeway.
Of course you do. State and federal agencies have trucked salmon by the millions downstream to San Francisco Bay since February. A few more things. Millions of trees are dying in forests and also in cultivated orchards for fruit and almonds. The dying forests usually mean a bad wildfire season. And California gets nearly 20% of its electricity from hydropower in a normal year. Last year, that fell to 8% as less water passed through hydro dams. So toss in a little powerless with your thirsty. One winner in the drought, landscaping services who offer lawn painting. Yes, lawn painting. If there's no water to green your lawn, a nice dye job will have to do.
Oh, my. So what's our history lesson for this week, Peter?
Steve, it's a lesson from history indeed, but not necessarily one that we've actually learned yet. 75 years ago this week, Congress and President Franklin Delano Roosevelt enacted the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act.
Yeah, Congress and a president working together. I've heard about that.
Back in the day, it happened, Steve. The law was in response to a drop in eagle populations, from habitat loss, from hunting, from people in pursuit of eggs or eagle feathers, and it was hoped that bald eagle populations would stabilize as a result of this new protection. But nobody factored in the rise of DDT. The miracle pesticide had just been invented a year earlier in 1939. So as the law helped stop people from taking bald eagle eggs, we learned over time that DDT made birds' eggshells thinner, and our national symbol ended up perched on the endangered species list.
But DDT was banned in the 70s, and those eagles are coming back.
Precisely, and that's the lesson we may or may not learn. President Obama recently announced an ambitious plan to save honeybees. The crucial pollinators have been in a free fall, and the government is taking steps to create and save bee-friendly habitat. But the president's plan doesn't pay much attention to the relatively new class of pesticides called neonicotinoids that are widely believed to be a big contributor to the bee crisis. Honeybees may or may not have time for us to play catch-up with these modern pesticides like we did with DDT. And to tie it all together, one of the most honeybee-reliant food crops in the U.S., all of those thirsty almond trees out in the California drought.
So let's hope there's a plan B for pollinators. Thanks for that, Peter.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Peter Dykstra is with Environmental Health News at EHN.org and thedailyclimate.org. And there's more on these stories at our website, LOE.org.